Om Hapyayantumamangani Vak Pranas Chachu Shrotram Ato Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarota Anirakaranamastu Anirakaranamehastu Taratmani Nirateya Upanishat Sudharmas Te Mayi Santu Te Mayi Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Very good. Welcome back. We continue in the seventh chapter, Bhuma Vidya. And you recall that the first 15 chapters of the text were concerned with a series of meditations to be done by Narada for the sake of Adhikaritvam. The chapter began with Narada complaining, so to speak, to Sanat Kumara, that he had studied all the scriptures and he understood it, but he still wasn't enlightened. And as we discussed last week, that's a sure sign of the lack of Adhikaritva. It's not penetrating, it's not going in. Why? Because one is not a prepared student, not an Adhikari. So for the sake of Adhikaritvam, these series of 15 meditations have been prescribed. Then a couple of classes ago, we finished those 15 meditations and then we moved on. I think just in the last class, we moved on. So these 15 meditations are preparation for what? It's just a preparation. If you only do the preparation, you're not accomplishing what you're set out to do. If you only chop up all the vegetables, what about the meal? So preparation is only that. It's only preparation. So then we came to chapter 16, where the goal was described with the word satyam. And satyam here means Brahman. Satya Brahma, the reality we know as Brahman. And then, of course, we're not done. So satyam, so the preparation is there. The goal is there, satyam, but now finally how to reach that goal. So for the sake of satyam, you need vijnana, knowledge, which was chapter 17. And for the sake of that vijnana, you need manana, which was chapter 18. And for the sake of that manana, you require shraddha, which was chapter 19. A little complicated. We did it in detail in the last class. If you miss a class, be sure to go to our website and stay up to date with our classes. Otherwise, this won't make any sense otherwise. One point I failed to make about the relationship between manana and shraddha. So manana, as we said, was a process of removing any kind of doubts, uncertainties with regard to what the teachings convey. And then we saw after manana, we saw the next chapter 19, which we finished in our last class on shraddha. There's an interesting relationship between manana and shraddha that may not be very obvious. But I found this out in a very interesting way. Everyone has doubts. It's kind of ironic that the more you think about something, the more doubts you'll have. And that's just the way the human mind is. And of course, it depends on one's nature. Well, as a young student, I thought about things a lot. Too much, arguably. So therefore, I had lots of doubts. So we're going through this very intense study. I'm talking about during our three-year course with Pujaswami Dayananda in the late 1980s. And of course, every doubt I would have, I'd go to him. You know, we had satsang a couple times a day, so we had plenty of time to deal with our doubts, and I was very vocal about my doubts, and he nicely handled all the doubts. This went on for months, and actually went on for several years. And over a period of time, I began to understand that more doubts were destined to come. As many doubts as I had removed, without doubt, more doubts would arise. That's the nature of the mind. So then, if enlightenment depends on the removal of the last doubt, we got a problem, right? We got a huge problem. If enlightenment depends on the last, when will you get to the last one? Then when you think you've got the last one, then what happens? You got it. So, what I eventually realized, and you've already figured this out, and that is, for any doubt I will have in the future, an answer is already there. Consider the fact that the ancient rishis and all of these great scholars who wrote the commentaries and sub-commentaries, they're a whole lot smarter than me. So any doubt that I would come up with, don't you think that they've already considered those doubts and have answers to those doubts? So what I finally came to understand is, for any doubt that may arise in the future, an answer is available. Now, I can't know the answer today because I don't have the doubt today. The doubt may come a year from now. Well, should that doubt come a year from now, an answer can definitely be found to handle that doubt. Of course, what I've just described is a kind of shraddha. Is it not? Trust. Faith in this teaching tradition. Trust in this teaching tradition that whatever doubts can come up in the future, the trust and confidence. A nice Sanskrit word, visrabda, means faith and confidence. So you have that faith and confidence that this teaching tradition is more than capable of handling my doubts. If it could handle the doubts of all these great, great saints and scholars who came before, they could be satisfied, then definitely I'm nothing. So definitely they can handle all my doubts. So this is a nice connection then between Shraddha and Manana, the last two chapters we've seen. Now we can move on. We have just several more steps before we arrive at the end of this development, this 23-step development. The first 15 steps were preparation, these meditations. Then we've seen four further steps of this development, and we're going to continue with several more in today's class. We'll go to chapter 20. Yada vai nistishtati, yada vai nistishtati, ata shraddhadhati, ata shraddhadhati. So yada ata, then shraddhadhati, you will have shraddha. So if, going back to those past four, if discovery of Brahman, satya, depends on vijnana, if vijnana depends on manana, if manana depends on shraddha, shraddha depends on what? And here the word comes, you see it in the second line, nishtha. Nishtha. But nishtha here, nishtha means being firmly established, but it has an odd meaning here. Very surprising meaning. So Shankaracharya says very briefly, he says, nishtha Guru Shushrushadi Tat Paratvam. Guru Shushrusha. Many of you know that word as meaning service to one's guru. Guru Seva. Guru Shushrusha. Interesting, we just saw that very word in our Sanskrit class. And it's actually a desiderative, meaning the desire to hear. What is the connection between a desire to hear? That's the literal meaning of shushrusha, means the desire to hear. So how does shushrusha come to mean service? What is the connection between wanting to hear and service? Well, in the context of guru, it becomes very clear. In order for the guru to teach, the guru needs certain minimum of things. In ancient times, the guru had a gurukulam, and in that gurukulam, they had daily rituals, and for those daily rituals, they required samet, the sacrificial twigs. So if you're going to show up at that gurukulam empty-handed, forget it. They'll send you away. Why? Because in order to maintain the daily operations of that gurukulam, they had to do the rituals. In order to do the rituals, they required a samet. You had better bring some samet. Okay. In modern times, of course, we don't need samet. You don't need to bring any twigs here. But you all make donations. That's the sushrusha. It's a very pragmatic thing of doing whatever is necessary for the guru to teach. Because only when those practical things are taken care of, the guru can teach, and then you can listen. Sushushra means listening. So Guru Shushrusha, here Shankara glosses as... he glosses nishta is what comes in our mantra here in Chandogya. Shankara translates it as Guru Shushrushadihi Tatparatvam, being focused on the guru and the needs of the guru, to support the guru and to allow those teachings to be made. Now, with that definition in mind, if we can return to the mantra. So, yada vai nistishtati, when one has nishta, when one has guru, sushrusha, when one serves the guru. We have to get the right meaning here. So yadavai nistishtati, when one serves the guru, atha, then shraddhati, then he can have faith in the guru and teaching tradition, meaning he can participate in that ongoing process of learning. If you don't support the guru, you don't have a guru to listen to. Therefore, what's the point of the prior steps? Shraddha, vijnana, and satya is absolutely inaccessible. So, by the way, we're going in the direction of more and more basic requirements. Just a quick comment here. Usually, we begin with the basics and work towards the more complex things. This one is ulta. So, we actually began with the goal, satyam. And now we're backing off from satyam. Okay, so I've done the 15 steps of preparation, those 15 meditations. The goal is satyam, brahma. So now we start backing off. What do I need for the sake of Brahman? Vijnanam, knowledge of Brahman. What do I need for the sake of knowledge of Brahman? Back off one more step. I need manana, removal of doubts. What do I need for the sake of manana? I need shraddha. What do I need for the sake of shraddha? I better have a teacher to teach me, otherwise what's the point of any of this? So the next step required going to more and more basic steps. We require then nishta, which means guru, sushrusha, service of the guru. Na anistishtan. Shraddhadhati, Shraddhadhati, Nistishtan eva Shraddhadhati, Nistishtan eva Shraddhadhati. Na anitishtan, without guru, up to paraphrase, without service to the guru, there will be no Shraddhadhati. There will be no Shraddha. So the requirement for Shraddha is service to the guru. Nistishtan eva Shraddhadhati. One will have access to the guru's teachings and the opportunity for that Shraddha, opportunity for manana, opportunity for vijnana, only when nistishtan, only when that person is performing the guru sushusha, taking care of the guru, making the teachings accessible. Nishtatu eva, nishtatu eva, vijignasitavya hiti, nishtavya, nishta eva, again, nishta means guru, sushrusha means service to the guru, eva indeed, vijignasitavya, should be sought after, literally should be understood, in context should be sought after. You should do it. You should take care of your guru. So this is all taught by Sanat Kumara to Narada. Narada replies, Nishtam Bhagavaha, Nishtam Bhagavaha, Vijignyase Hiti, Vijignyase Hiti. Bhagavaha, O Master, Nishtam Vijignyase, I will pursue that Nishta. I am ready to do that Guru Sushursha so that I can have access to these teachings. So that is our 20th step leading to the 21st, which is what is now required, what is a prerequisite for coming to the Guru with the proper attitude, and that is discussed in the next chapter. Yada vaikaroti, yada vaikaro, ata nistishtati, ata nistishtati. Ata nistishtati, one will have that nishta, yada, when karoti. That is about as nebulous as a statement can be. When he does. When he does what? That's all it says. I mean, it's like Sanat Kumara here is speaking in code words. You know, I think it probably... A couple who has been married for 50 years, I have a feeling that they just say, one, you know, tomorrow. that one word conveys a whole paragraph of information. And because they've been living together 50 years, they know exactly what that one word means. All right. But somebody has to let the rest of us in on it. We don't know. So here, Sanat Kumara uses this code word, karoti. What in the world does that mean? Literally means he does. He does what? Again, we have to turn to commentary to see. Where is it here? So karoti, in the second line, you see the word kritihi. And that kriti means that which is done, the action which is done. Shankara glosses, kritihi tu eva vichignasita. Back up. Where am I here? I'm looking at the text. Where's the commentary? There it is. Yadavai karoti kritihi indriya samyamaha chitta ekagrata karanam cha. According to Shankara, kriti, that which is done, that which is to be done, there are two elements. One is indriya samyama, control of your senses. And in a meditative sense, withdrawal of your senses, pratyahara. And then the second part, Shankara says, is chitta ekagrata karana, bringing your mind to a one-pointed condition. He's talking about, so here, that word, that innocent little word kriti means the preparation of mind and senses to be skillful in meditation. Indriya samyama, control of the senses, withdrawal of the senses, and chitta, ekagrata, one-pointedness of mind. This is considered essential prior to Guru Sushrusha, which means before you show up at your guru's ashram with your handful of samit, sacrificial twigs, you had better be prepared up here. You had better be capable of concentrated attention. You had better be a skillful meditator. And that's what's being said here, that the ability to withdraw your senses and focus your mind is considered one of the very fundamental steps leading to knowledge of Brahman. Remember, we're going to more and more fundamental. So this is one of the, in fact, there's only one step more fundamental than this, which we'll see in the next verse. So we're down to the real basics right now, the ability to focus and concentrate your mind for the sake of meditation. Na akritva nistishtati, na akritva nistishtati, kritva eva nistishtati, kritva eva nistishtati. Na akritva nistishtati, you will not be able, so nistishtati is a reference to the nishta in the prior mantra. So you will not be ready, and I'm going to give a loose paraphrase here, you will not be ready to serve and study under the guidance of your guru unless your mind is prepared. That makes perfect sense. So it's not merely a matter of showing up with your hands full of twigs, or in a modern sense, it's not merely enough to put some money in a hundi. The preparation has to be here in your mind. Your mind has to be prepared. Kritihi eva vijignasitavya hiti. Kritihi tu eva vijignasitavya hiti. Sorry, I missed a word. Kritihi tu, but kritihi. And here kriti means what? According to Shankara, it is the indriya samyama, withdrawal of the senses, and chitta ekagrata, making your mind one-pointed. This preparation, vijignasitavya, is to be sought after. You had better bring about that kind of preparation. This is Sanat Kumara's instruction to Narada. Narada, who replies, kritim bhagavaha, vijignyase bhagavaha, master, kritim, which means control of the senses and one-pointedness of mind, vijignyase, I want to accomplish that, I will accomplish that, I will prepare myself with control of the senses and one-pointedness of mind. That is the 21st of 23 steps. 22 is the penultimate step. And let's see what that is. So the penultimate step means the most fundamental requirement for one's spiritual search, the beginning point of one's spiritual search. Of course, we spoke of the 15 meditations for the sake of adhikaritvam. Well, your real spiritual search only begins when you're an adhikari, not before. So having accomplished the adhikaritvam, then and then only does a proper spiritual inquiry begin. And what we're seeing now is the the real basis for that spiritual search. Let's see that here. All right. Yadavai sukham labhate, yadavai sukham labhate, atah karoti. More code words here, I'm afraid. Very obscure, which is why we never study Upanishad without commentary. And that's just the nature of Upanishad. That style of literature is very poetic, very archaic. So it's pretty much inaccessible without the help of a commentary. So he says, Ata karoti, you will accomplish that kritihi. You will accomplish the indriya samyama, control of your senses. You will accomplish that chitta ekagrata, one-pointedness of your mind. When? Yada sukham labhate. And here the word labhate is not very helpful. It says when you gain sukha, but the sense is when you seek sukha. And Shankaracharya here, he says, sukham niratishayam vakshyamanam labdhavyam maya iti manyate. He says, when you think that absolute contentment is to be sought by me. This is the beginning of spiritual pursuit. Let me put it in some very simple, direct terms. Somebody who is, how shall we say, adjusted. And we have this nice expression in English, well-adjusted. Well-adjusted means what? I'm going to be a little sarcastic now and talk about the frog in the cooking pot. You've heard this story? So there's a frog in a pot of water, and you start heating it up. At first, the water is cool, the frog is okay. Water gets a little bit warmer, the frog adjusts. Well-adjusted frog. The water gets hotter and hotter, and the frog adjusts. Well-adjusted frog. Now, at any point, that frog could jump out of the pot. It's open. But the frog doesn't. And eventually, the frog is cooked. The frog dies in the boiling water. Generally, we think of being well-adjusted as a good thing. Well, the frog in the pot example shows the opposite. And that is, when we reconcile ourselves to a life of misery and assume that nothing can be done, this is just the way life is. The ancient Greeks had this doctrine of stoicism. You just have to put up with it. Whatever it is, you just have to bear with it. There's no choice. Be tough. Of course, then you deal with all the misery of life, and you're as tough as you can be, and then you die. I don't know what kind of philosophy is that. It doesn't seem to accomplish much. Well, the recognition that there must be a solution to the problem of suffering is where a spiritual pursuit begins. This is very fundamental, and I think you'll take it for granted because you dealt with this long ago. At the beginning, if you can think back, at the beginning of your spiritual quest, there was the recognition that no matter what you do in life, you will never be perfectly content. You figured that out. If you didn't figure that out, you wouldn't be sitting here tonight. Spiritual pursuit begins with the recognition that life will never be okay. Meaning, to be well adjusted is not enough. there's something more, something further. There's an interesting application of logic here, a little bit like the frog in the pot, the idea of adjustment. If you could adjust to being miserable, to being well-adjusted, it means being comfortable in the presence of something that is not innate to your nature. That's a little obscure, so let me illustrate that. The metaphor that's given, I think it's a traditional metaphor, is if you have interesting metaphor. Suppose there's a tiny, tiny, tiny little speck of dust. Harmless, right? Unless it's in your eye. If that tiny, tiny little speck of dust is in your eye, it'll make you miserable until you get that thing out. You want to adjust to the pain and discomfort of having that speck of dust in your eye? What for? You should try to get rid of it. The fact that you're not comfortable with that tiny little speck of dust in your eye shows that it doesn't belong there. If it belonged there, why would it irritate you? You know, we made a reference to this I forget if it was last night's class, some class, where in our bowels are gazillions of bacteria. You'd think all these bacteria would be a bad thing. Not these. They belong there. In fact, if you killed off all those bacteria, you would die. So the bacteria belong there, therefore they're not a problem. Unlike the speck of dust in your eye, which doesn't belong there, therefore it is a problem. Now, what this metaphor suggests, that if dukkha, suffering, were your swarupa, your true nature, it'd be just fine. It belongs there. Suffering is your nature. I'm supposed to suffer. Suffering is normal. That's the well-adjusted frog. But most of us are a spiritual seeker is unlike that well-adjusted frog. A spiritual seeker is one who recognizes, I'm not supposed to feel miserable. It's not my natural state. It is something foreign. Suffering is foreign to my natural condition, to my surupa, and therefore it is something that can be removed, just like the speck of dust can be removed from the eye. In the same way, suffering can be removed from life's experience. So this is the recognition that leads to here it says here, sukham labhate, and it means as Shankara explains, a desire for sukha means a desire to be free from dukkha, is what it means. So this desire for dukkha nivritti, to be free from all forms of suffering. This is where a spiritual pursuit begins. The language here is sukham labhate. When you have that desire for sukha, when you have that desire to be free from dukkha, atta, then, karoti, then you'll start getting ready to do something about it. And what will you do if you want to get rid of that dukkha? What would be a good way to get started? Well, a good way to get started would be to get a handle on your mind and senses so that you can deal with all of this. After all, the locus of suffering, something obvious that we forget, the locus of suffering is in your mind. So where will you undertake the process of removing that suffering in your mind. So that's why the prior step, that kritihi, was referring to indriya samyama, withdrawing your senses for the sake of meditation, and chitta ekagrata, the ability to focus your mind in a one-pointed fashion. Then, na asukam labdva, na asukam labdva karoti, karo. Sukam heva labdva karoti, sukam heva labdva karoti. Asukam, na asukam labdva karoti. Sanskrit loves double negatives. They're all over the place. So, without without gaining this desire for sukha, you will never commit yourself to a spiritual path. On the other hand, sukham eva labdhva, only one who is committed to gaining sukha, one who is committed to removing dukkha, only that person, karoti, will be engaged in the process of preparing the mind with the ekagrata and the indriya samyama. So the preparation, if you're not interested in pursuing the goal, why will you do the preparation? Is the point. Sukham tu heva vijignasitavyam hiti, vijignasitavyam hiti. Tu, therefore, sukham eva, the pursuit of that sukha, the removal of that dukkha, vijignasitavyam, is to be pursued. And this is Sanat Kumara's instruction to Narada. Narada replies, sukham bhagava vijignase hiti, vijignase hiti. Bhagavaha, O Sanat Kumara, O Master, sukham vijignase. I want to pursue that sukha. I want to live a life of spiritual growth. That is the penultimate step, leading to the final step. Can't really call it final step. This is the conclusion of a life of spiritual growth. Certainly the conclusion of chapter 7. Chapter 7 is called Bhuma Vidya. And in this 23rd chapter, tiny little chapters, in this 23rd chapter, we arrive finally at Bhuma. After 15 chapters of meditation and for the sake of preparation, after another, I think, 7 more steps of pursuit of satyam, of Brahma, the ultimate truth, now we come to the kind of the crowning point of the whole chapter. What this whole chapter is about? Bhuma. Bhuma, you remember, is that which is limitless, that which is vast. Yaha vai bhuma, yaha vai bhuma, tat sukham.
Tat sukham.
So tat sukham, that happiness or contentment that you seek, that freedom from suffering that you seek, sorry, I was looking at the grammar here. If you look at grammar, then you go off on a big, big detour. Okay, no problem. Yaha bhuma. Bhuma, in spite of its appearance, is a masculine noun. And that's what threw me for just a moment. The form Bhuma may look feminine to you, if you know a little bit of Sanskrit. It's not. The word is Bhuman, like Rajan becomes Raja. Bhuman becomes Bhuma. So here, Yaha Bhuma. So that which you seek for the sake of contentment, that which you seek for the sake of removing suffering, Yaha, that one is Bhuma. That one is limitless. Now, what is the point here? He continues. Na alpe sukham asti. Na alpe sukham asti. Bhuma eva sukham. Bhuma eva sukham. Na alpe sukham asti. Alpe, in anything less. Less than what? Less than Bhuma. In anything less than Bhuma, na sukham asti. You will not find contentment. You will not be free from suffering. Now, these words actually have some profound significance. We'll see it here, and then it'll come much bigger in the next mantra. So, Bhuma eva sukham. To paraphrase, contentment, perfect contentment, complete freedom from suffering is only found in Bhuma, in that which is vast. Now, the definition, that's trying to see what should we discuss here and what should we discuss. Let's hold off on it. Because Sanat Kumara himself is going to explain this in the next mantra. So let me not... What is the expression? I shouldn't rob his thunder. So why should I take away from his thunder? He's going to explain it very nicely in the next mantra. Here he says, anything less than Bhuma is not enough. We can talk about it from a worldly standpoint. No amount of worldly happiness will make you completely content, right? You know that very well. No matter whatever you enjoy, what a setup. Setup for disaster is what I mean. Whatever you enjoy, you repeat it several times, you don't enjoy it anymore. There's this psychological thing that happens, the psychologists call it satiation. You eat that first laddu, it's great. The second one is also pretty good. Third one is okay. Fourth one, by the fifth one, you don't want to look at laddus anymore, because that satiation has... But isn't that true of any and all worldly experiences? We've talked about this in other contexts, that, and it's kind of ironic, people who win these mega lotteries, lotteries which are not tens of millions, but hundreds of millions of dollars... Such people, according to some studies, are subject to depression. Huh? You win $100 million. How can you get depressed? Now, being depressed before you win $100 million is very understandable. But now that you've won $100 million, how can you possibly be depressed? Well, what happens is, having won the $100 million and having completely changed your lifestyle, you still find that you're miserable. And if $100 million can't make you happy, you are hopeless, right? This is the discovery of the winner of a mega lottery. Even the $100 million is not capable of removing all your suffering. If you have $100 million, you're living in a palace. Everything is just gold-plated, gold leaf. Everything is as fancy and as elegant as you can imagine. This huge 100-room palace. You have a staff of 50 servants to take care of you. You have every amenity, every kind of food. You have a staff of cooks. And you give them every day, you give them an order. What kind of food do you want? You know, it is the most elegant lifestyle imaginable. And if you wake up in the morning with a splitting headache, then what? Or your stomach is upset, you've got the staff of cooks, and you don't want to eat anything. You get the point that even $100 million can't buy you the perfect contentment and peace we ultimately seek. And the sad discovery of the winner of that huge lottery is gaining happiness through worldly means is impossible. And if that lottery winner does not have recourse to a spiritual tradition, that lottery winner will definitely get depressed. If $100 million can't make me happy, then nothing can make me happy. Depression. So, then what will make you happy? So $100 million can be exceeded by what? Well, by $1 billion. Then $1 billion can be exceeded by 10 million. 10 million can be exceeded. So there's always something more. Bhuma is that for which there's nothing more. I think that's what he says here. Let me see where I saw that. He says here, Yovai Bhuma. Yovai Bhuma, Shankara explains. That which is Bhuma, he gives some synonyms, Mahat, that which is vast. That which is Bahu, numerous, innumerable. And the key word here is Niratishayam. Nice Bahuvrihi compound. That which cannot be excelled, that which cannot be exceeded, is Bhuma. Notice, 100 million can be exceeded by a billion. Billion can be exceeded by 10, etc., etc., etc. That which cannot be exceeded is Shankara's definition of Bhuma, which means it can't be something in the world. Anything in the world can be exceeded. Anything and everything in the world can be exceeded. So this Bhuma is not something you can go to the local, what is that store down the way? They call it Wawa. You go to that Wawa and say, I want Bhuma. Sorry for being silly. You're not going to find it in Wawa or anywhere because it's not part of the world. And then Sanat Kumara continues his instruction, Bhumatu eva, vijignasitavyaha iti. So he gives us instruction to Narada, Bhumatu. Tu eva. These are very strong words here. That Bhuma, in particular, indeed, the vijignasitavyaha is to be pursued. You can't settle the American English expression. You can't settle for anything less. But Bhuma is that which cannot be exceeded. How will you reach there? You won't. You can't. If you're taking steps, step, 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 what will it take to reach? Suppose Bhuma is a number. What will it take to reach Bhuma? So you start, we said 100 million times 10 billion times 10, 10 billion, etc. So if you go on multiplying by 10, when will you reach Bhuma if it's a number? And the answer, of course, is never. Through a series of steps, you cannot reach the infinite. What that means, through a process of self-improvement, you can never gain perfect contentment. That's an interesting observation. Through a process of self-improvement. And now you may think of Vedanta as being a kind of a spiritual self-improvement program. It's not. And the reason it's not is for the reason we just said. Through a process of improvement, you can never reach that which is nirathishayam, that which is unexcellable, that which can't be exceeded. You can go on getting better and better and better. You can never be perfect. Your body can be improved upon. You've heard me give these examples before. You go to the gym every day. When will your body be perfect? You go and some people have the same problem with therapy. You go and see a therapist once a week for years. When will you be free from all of your insecurities? It's the same thing. Your body will never be perfect. Your mind and emotions will never be perfect. Yet, we seek perfection. This is a setup for disaster, as we said before, unless we discover the Vedantic trick. Sorry to call it a trick. It's not a very appropriate statement. But there is sort of a Vedantic trick. And the trick is expressed in a tenth man story, which you all know very well, so I won't repeat it. And that is, perfection cannot be achieved through a series of steps, but it's possible to discover that perfection is your already existent condition, which is covered up by ignorance. You cannot become perfect. You cannot reach Bhuma, but you can discover you've been Bhuma all the time, and you just haven't recognized it. And that's the message, of course, of the Tenth Man story. That's the message of all of Vedanta. And look at, it's almost ironic. We seek perfection. This goes back to that speck of dust in the eye example I gave before. How is it that we should innately seek perfection? And be very clear, we do seek perfection. Do you seek freedom from suffering 99% of the time? Do you seek to be free from suffering 99.9% of the time? Suppose today is that one tenth of a percent of the time is today, and you're absolutely miserable. It's not good enough. You seek perfect freedom from suffering. You seek perfect uninterrupted contentment. And the point is this: how is it that we are wired in such a way to seek something that appears to be impossible. If it's true that we are wired in such a way that we seek the impossible, then God must be a sadist. Right? You see my point? If we are created in such a way where we are compelled to seek the impossible, then whoever created us has got a very strange sense of humor, because then we're destined to suffering with no possible recourse. On the other hand, the very fact that we are wired in such a way that we seek perfection suggests that perfection is possible. In a reasonable world, the fact that we seek perfection suggests that perfection is possible. But as we just said, perfection is not possible through a series of steps of self-improvement. Perfection is possible when you discover the already existent perfection of your true self, Atma, which is Bhuma. And this is how Sant Kumara concludes when he says, you should seek that Bhuma, meaning that already existent condition of perfection, which is your true nature, that is to be sought. To which Narada replies, Bhumanam Bhagavaha, Bhumanam Bhagavaha, Vijignase Hiti, Vijignase Hiti, Bhagavaha, O Master, Sanat Kumara, Bhumanam, that Bhuma, that state of vastness, perfection, and completeness, Vijignase, I want to discover that, Iti, he concludes. And we're going to keep the class a little bit short tonight, and then we'll continue with this very important teaching in the next class. Okay. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Sadgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Hamritangamaya. Om Shanti, 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 Om. Very good. See you next time.